Welcome to another episode of Speaking Lawn, the official podcast of StreakingLawn.com. I'm going to laugh every time I say this until the end of time, I suppose. Once again, my name is Pierce. And once again, I'm joined by Zach and only Zach this week. So, Zach, you get to talk a lot. How do you feel about that?
I feel good. I feel like this is if there was a week for me to be able to talk a lot, this is a good week for it.
There's a lot of things we could talk about. I guess there's topics we could avoid if we really wanted to, but no, we will talk about football because that's what we're here to do, is talk about the Hoos on all the things we watch, including just a complete devastating collapse of a performance against the dreaded Virginia Tech Hokies over the Thanksgiving holiday, a tradition unlike any other in sports. Although sometimes we play them really close and lose on a field goal. And once every 20 years, Bryce Perkins come along and we can win. But yeah, that was not the case this week, as Virginia, you know, coming off that Duke win, came into the game. We were saying, hey, it's sort of all that matters as far as how is the conversation going to go for this program and staff and team, and where are we headed. And not only did they lose, they just got completely dominated. I think the best way you could put it. So Zach, I think we already know the answer to this, but how did the team handle the responsibility of steering this conversation about the program, and where is that conversation now headed into the offseason?
It's pretty bleak. It's pretty bleak, Pierce. The goodwill is just gone. Listen, it just off the field real quick. Like Tony Elliott did to lead the program through the tragedy, what these guys have done coming back to the field. I just want to put that out there, say that I commend them for that. As individuals, as human beings, it's very impressive. So I'll say that on the get, just from the jump. But after that, on the field, that was just horrendous. Like that was just an embarrassing performance to so many degrees. It's hard to blame it on any one person or any one individual, but it, at the end of the day, guess who the buck stops with, at least for the on-field performance? That's Tony Elliott. And I put it in five takeaways that I think going into next year, Elliott's officially on the hot seat. Maybe that was a little bit of an overreaction, but I looking back on it, I don't think that it is. He's not going to get fired this offseason, but if you have another season that's just kind of like, next year?
Three wins faith? Next year is not going to cut it, right?
Like, no. North Carolina, that was a big win at the time. North Carolina has since fallen outside the top 25. So, like, I don't know how much that matters in, like, a vibe sense, but I just don't think, even with the Duke win, even with that, just to lose this game and just not even be competitive, not even try, really. Like, just the way that they didn't even go for it on fourth down in the second half, the way they were on the 6-yard line and were like, no, we're going to kick a field goal to make it 31-3. We're going to take this from a 31-point game. What are you doing? Like, are you just completely inept at, like, doing football? Like, everyone in that – and it was even before then. Like, they didn't go for it on fourth down, down 4 scores in the second half multiple times. And then twice, Virginia Tech scored on the next play. It wasn't like eventually it's like, oh, they just didn't get back in it. No, Virginia Tech immediately proved them wrong. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was just like, let's like stop the bleeding, or like let's put points on the board so it's not a 55-0 shutout. But at the same time, no one cares that the final score is 55-17. It's the same exact feeling as 55-3. 55-0 would have been really bad, but like at the same time, it's the same sentiment. I can't even get in the X's and O's here. Just looking at some raw stats, Virginia was outgained in this game 500-286. Virginia ran 23 more plays than Virginia Tech in this game and got outgained by 214 yards. What?
Well, like, yeah.
What was this football game?
I mean, the defense was just, you know, like I said, completely dominate. We could go into everything. And they were exposed as the inferior a football unit, however you want to break down any of this. But I mean, the defense just, Virginia Tech got to do whatever they wanted to do, any play they wanted to do it seemed like. So a lot of questions to be answered from this coaching staff. We don't think they're going anywhere and have no reason to believe so. And don't really need to share opinions on that one way or the other because it's not going to happen. So knowing that, I mean, they're tasked with going into transfer portal craziness that is the landscape of this sport now and figuring out how they can improve. I think what we talked about all year, right, is usable depth. And we saw injuries and particularly on the offensive line, lack of depth really just doom a lot of results. So it lead to a lot of close losses or in the case of the Georgia Tech Virginia Tech games, lead to blowouts. If we take a look at who they've got coming back, I mean the holes are sort of all over the place, except if the guys are healthy, you've got a lot of guys who play prominent roles coming back. Is that good in some cases with Tony Musket and Anthony Calandria both having eligibility? Certainly, I think that's good. I think Kobe B Pace coming back. I think Xavier Brown being healthy could be really helpful. Obviously, Malachi Fields coming back would be great. I say would because we don't know who they're going to lose. And now I'm just naming some of their best players, so who knows? We have nothing, no knowledge of anything along those lines. But when you look at where they really struggled in the trenches on, I would say, both sides, something's got to change. You got to bring in something here, no matter if everybody's healthy. The guys who were here and healthy weren't going to get it done. I don't know.
I mean, you hope that the defense is much healthier next season. I can't believe we're already like going to cope mode for next year, but you hope that the defense is much healthier. You hope that Jonas Anker sticks around. You hope that you get Lex Long back from injury, Antonio Clary back. You have some experience on the back line. You have Cam Robinson. I believe James Jackson will be back if he doesn't transfer, which is just like the caveat you have to include for every single good player here. So that's not a horrible start. Dre Walker has a bright future, but I think you need help at corner, definitely. You definitely need help on the defensive line. You're losing probably a number of guys to graduation there. And especially considering that they just got the ball run on them just constantly in the losses that they did suffer. At least I'm most immediately just thinking of this Virginia Tech loss, because I don't know if my brain can go that much farther back than that, just what I saw on Saturday. And that's just gonna th that's the other thing that sucks, is like, obviously this is the last game of the year, but that is what people are going to think about for UVA football for the next 9 months. Like that's what you put on tape, and I will say, like, Malik Washington and Brian Stevens having success this season, stepping up to ACC, the ACC level, even Tony Musket to some degree, I think that that will have a benefit in recruiting. Jackie's already sort of been putting out stories about how people are, recruits are saying that. I think that that's a valuable tool. At the same time, like, you can get good production from guys from smaller schools, veteran guys, that's valuable. It's still not very inspiring. You can't, you're not going to have an entire roster of Brian Stevens and Malik Washington. Beyond that, I mean, they should bring some guys back on the offensive line. Again, is the continuity matter that much? How good are they in year three with what this would be year two for Boley, year three for Furnish and Josie, I think. I guess Blake Steen is your right tackle, and his next year would be his third year, and then you need to find a center. I think you want more help there in the portal. You definitely need a wide receiver in the portal. I think Sudarian Harrison and Jane Gibson are a good start there, assuming also that Field stays. You need somebody on the outside there because those two guys are probably slot guys for now. But at the same time, like, it's hard to be super inspired about a roster that needs to build itself back up from a 3-9 season. That's not a fun place to be.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is you feel good at quarterback. That's the most important
Yeah.
position. If you can cobble together more health on the O-line and then, like we said, usable depth, then maybe you'll have more success protecting these the pair of quarterbacks and go from there to try and get to being a respectable bowl eligible type of team, which they were, as we all know, close to doing this year if a few plays here and there go a different direction. But I mean, if you take a look at the schedule,
I was about to
so
say,
assume you
yeah.
pick you assume you beat Richmond, you got Maryland at home, which Maryland clearly better this year than the Hoos. I like that it's at home. I'm not going to think Virginia is going to be favored or anything like that. I haven't looked at Maryland's depth chart or what they're
I
doing,
think they
but
lose some guys, but it's still a Big
I
Ten
would
school.
say it's a lean loss, probably.
Yeah.
At most optimistic lean loss. You got at Coastal, who is not the team that they were when they were going to play Coastal before the shooting. So, still, it's a road game against a program that's shown recently and knows how to beat up on Power Five teams that aren't very good. So I don't know. Maybe we'll go toss up. I don't know. You got at Notre Dame, and
Loss.
you've got at Clemson, probably not. You got at Pitt, who is a disaster. But when's the I mean, has Virginia ever won at Pittsburgh? I mean, it seems like they always play terribly. There, you got at Virginia Tech, loss. You got at Wake Forest, and then you host Louisville, BC, North Carolina, and SMU. Six
Yeah.
wins. We'll see. Again, I'm no expert on these teams. I don't, and even if I was an expert on their current rosters, that UNC team is going to look a lot different next year than it does right now. I'll tell you that much. And so will Virginia, most likely, but hopefully it's for the better. The problem with hoping that it's for the better is exactly what we've been saying, what worst case scenario was. Is what we saw, because this is going to dominate the conversation about the program. I mean, it's all over. Not that, people tweeting really impacts anything, but it certainly doesn't help the conversation in the minds of recruits or people whose opinions on the program actually get things done. But still, that's the whole conversation. Virginia doesn't care about football. Virginia's not going to support football. They're already still trying to gather enough money to build facilities that should have been built 20 years ago or 15 years ago. How are they going to get you the NIL? Wherever the truth in these numbers is, which very few people actually know where the real truth is, the truth certainly isn't good enough to make up for the assumptions and the chatter, which is that the numbers for building a football program to compete are not there. So something's gonna have to change to show that that conversation can be had.
Yeah.
It's just we haven't seen a change yet. So are we going to see a change? I don't know.
I think it's also just, I think all year when they were losing these close games, when they were competitive, we were just coming on here, especially after that 0-5 start, and we were just like, you just gotta win. Like, you just gotta win a couple games. And I think Caroline quote tweeted somebody saying, like, UVA was like a top five unluckiest team this year. Evidenced by the fact that, like, if you built a model and it's like, okay, close games are like typically decided by luck, and I buy into that, like, that is an analytical, not fact, but there's math to back that up. At the same time, like, I don't even entirely fault Tony Elliott for it. Sometimes I just fault Virginia football and what it is, but to some extent, I do fault this coaching staff for the fact that it seems like when it matters, the team just isn't prepared to win football games.
Well, they
And
certainly weren't this week.
listen, I know that ball, if a ball bounces, maybe they beat Louisville, maybe they beat Miami, maybe they, but guess what? If the ball bounced, they almost lost to UNC. Like, if James Jackson doesn't pick that pass off, what happens? You know what I mean? Like, if it slips through his hands, such is the nature of close games. I don't know where my ramble is going, but at the end of the day, like, wins and losses are what count. And Tony Elliott has not put wins on the board. He's put six in 19 games, which is just, I mean, and he's had no favors with the scheduling, but at the same time, like, there were opportunities this year. Boston College on the road. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we're being too harsh, but at the same time, you just lost 55-17 to Tech in the one game that, like, at least just don't, like, I don't know.
Oh, it was the only game that didn't matter, and you chose that game to look like, you know, the most. I'm just going to keep repeating myself. Just complete lack of being up for it. And I don't think it's that the players didn't care. I'm sure the players cared. I'm sure the coaches want to win too. But the performance just shows the complete difference in preparation and execution. And I don't think it's ability, you know. I don't think, like, I mean, we see Malik Washington, right? Like, we see Calandria's arm. Like, we know there's ability. And they just didn't show that they belonged to be on the same field as a super mediocre Virginia Tech team that, you know, brought it. So I don't know why the Hoos didn't bring it. All they had to do was bring it to change the conversation. And instead they did the complete opposite. And so that's where we are until next Labor Day weekend, when we'll get to see what the third year of this staff's team looks like. So plenty of breakdown as the offseason goes along. We don't need to talk about it anymore. You feel all this. If you're listening to this, you know how it is. But, you know, we'll pay attention to the goings on, and maybe the conversation is about opportunity. Like you said, there's already some recruits that Jackie at 247 has talked about. You know, they throw the ball, they showcase their skill guys. Like, this is not a boring team. This would be a fun Power Five team to come get some playing time in. Right.
There's absolutely opportunity. Yeah.
We shall see if they take advantage of that in the recruiting, both finishing up first years, but more importantly at this point, the transfer portal. So let's talk about hoops. The women's team went to the Cayman Islands and almost beat defending champion LSU the same day that the football team was getting just obliterated. Boy, would that have been nice had they won. you're like, yeah, that's a really strong performance against the defending champs. Still a loss. And again, I'm not obviously dogging on the women's team. I'm just lamenting the UVA fandom that could have used that amazing news. Instead, it was just an encouraging performance that you know, backs up other encouraging performance they had in Cayman, and also coming off, you know, their losses prior, hopefully getting back into playing to the, you know, upper echelon of their ability. I think they very much could do well in conference play as it gets going. But as far as the men goes, they got obliterated. and then they came back and beat West Virginia.
We are a women's basketball school now, Pierce.
We, you know, the men's soccer team lost in the, I believe it was Sweet 16. The field hockey team lost in the Final Four. So these are all relatively successful performances, of course. So baseball, you know, baseball should be, no, we're not lost giving up on basketball. We're not giving up on basketball. Of course, but that was a punch to the mouth from Wisconsin, who I feel like maybe owed the Virginia program one after the punches to the mouth that we've given Wisconsin over the years. It was discouraging for obviously we never like to see this basketball team lose, but I think it raised a lot of questions of how are they going to perform in the meat of, you know, a tougher conference schedule. Obviously, there's still out-of-conference games to come. A&M's tonight at the time of this being published. So that's a big SEC-ACC challenge against a ranked team and former Virginia Tech coach Buzz Williams. Anyway, the performance in Florida, those games, I think both asked a lot of questions of this team that we knew we were going to have a lot of questions to keep going through as the roster gets, tweaked and minutes for guys like Leon Bond go up and down. And I think we could get into all the positions on the floor. But my initial question to you, Zach, sorry for rambling,
you're good,
is the questions that have been asked and maybe even asked more loudly after the Wisconsin blowout loss. Did you see things against West Virginia that maybe started to answer some of those questions, things we could look for against the A&M Aggies? And then, of course, I mean, that Syracuse game is right around the corner, too. We'll get into conference play, which, is the second most important thing next to postseason play. How have we solved some of the issues presented in these first few games?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the West Virginia game was that dramatic of a turnaround. I think you saw more experimentation, and I granted, like, for the coaching staff, it's a 2-day turnaround, so it's hard. You're not revolutionary, but I liked the usage of Dunn and Bond together in the front court. I've said it in various spaces. If you're gonna lose in the paint and you're gonna lose on the defensive boards, you might as well commit to it and actually try to, like, get something going on the other end.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, you might as well benefit from the fact that you can't, you're not as big as the other teams. So it's kind of a depressing thing to say, but, like, yeah, I mean, try some different things. You know, you have these elite athletes. They're not elite athletes where you necessarily, I think Blake Buchanan will be fine long term, absolutely. This season, up in the air. I think he's going to be better in March than in November, undoubtedly.
Sure.
I do think, I mean, Texas A&M has the number one offensive rebound rate in the country, which maybe they're missing Henry Coleman, but even if they are, that's not pretty. That's not going to be fun. I also do think, and I'll touch defensively before getting into the offense, I think this team is going to be completely fine defensively in the long run. I'm not actually that worried about, they're not going to be a good defensive rebounding team. They're just not, unless Blake Buchanan really turns things around or Jordan Minor, all of a sudden everything clicks, which I just don't really expect to happen. But they're elite enough in other areas defensively that it doesn't really matter. For instance, their 2-point percentage defense, so, like, what other teams are shooting from 2-point range against them, 39.3%. That's the fourth lowest in the country, so the fourth best for defenses. Their block rate of 18.9%, this is all per KenPom, is third. Steal rate 15.4% is sixth. Adjusted defensive efficiency per KenPom, again, it is a little wonky for the first 10 games, but they're 12th. I think this is a really good defense with elite athletes. If they had a Caden Chedrick inside, they'd be a top five defense, or just not just to throw Chedrick out there, just like an experienced, legitimate athletic center. I think that they're going to be fine defensively, even in the games where they've given up tons of offensive rebounds. They really haven't let up that many second chance points. It's just, it's generally just been the scoring inside that's hurt them. But at the same time, like, when you're blocking shots and trying to block shots, and that's sort of what your defense is relying on inside, you're going to give up offensive rebounds. And when you don't have the size or the strength, you're going to give up offensive rebounds. It's about limiting the impact. And frankly, people talk about, like, second chance opportunities. Possessions after offensive rebounds aren't as valuable as possessions before, like, 30, they're 20 seconds. They're shorter. They're innately 66%, 67% as valuable as typical offensive possessions. Now, granted, they start with the ball on the inside. So there is value
to
that.
I don't know that the math adds up.
Does it not?
Well, I'm saying
they have to bring the ball up on a 30-second possession.
If seconds are what is value, then yeah, but it's not seconds that are value, it's points.
No, I know. I'm just saying that the opportunity of a possession after an offensive rebound is not as great, assuming that it doesn't take 10 seconds, which it can't, to start a typical offensive possession. It is a less valuable offensive possession, and you are hectically...
Yeah,
you're not in a settled offense.
Here's what I mean to be like, if we had a stat that was how often does the team score when they get an offensive rebound, so following that rebound, versus how often do they score just after a defensive stop and take out steals and breakaways.
Yeah, like so that. I have Wisconsin up. Let's do some quick. I really should have done this before the podcast, but
I don't even know if I assume it's tracked by someone out there, but I'm saying this is pretty nuanced stuff.
Well, let's see. Okay. So Wisconsin had 12 second chance points. I'm going to talk through this because I'm doing the math live. They had 12 second chance points on 20 offensive rebounds. That is divided by two, 0.6 points per possession, right?
Yeah.
They averaged 1.182 points per possession.
There you go.
Overall. There's your value. Again, that's a small sample size. I've been trying to pull up the stats from the Florida game and the West Virginia game. But
we're getting derailed. Back to your point.
Okay. Sorry.
No, it's my fault.
My point. No, you're good. No. It's a completely fair. Like, I appreciate you challenging me on it so I could provide some evidence to it. I'm not as concerned about the offensive rebounding as I am just them getting back down in the paint, yeah, not being able to stop that. And I think that that's just going to happen. What I am concerned about for this team is the fact that they do not have a secondary creator on offense. It is Reese Beekman, and then it is Isaac McNeely three-pointers. And typically, to get an Isaac McNeely three-pointer, you need Reese Beekman to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the offense right now. Well, and or it's a Ryan Dunn finish created by Reese Beekman.
Yeah.
That's, like, what is, like, so I'm not asking.
That's what I was going to say. What's the hope there? It would be that Harris could bring some of that as, you know, your second point guard. And then it's got to be Rhodey.
Yeah, I think Bond after that.
Interesting.
I think.
I was just thinking about like the roles, but yeah.
No, I get what you're saying. I think what stresses me out about Harris and Rhodey is that they're just not good at producing looks that they're capable of hitting at an efficient rate. I think Bond, as an offensive player, with how they use them, is. Some of that just comes down to the fact that those two guys, Rhodey and Harris, can't hit mid-range shots, and they take way too many of them. I like a good mid-range jumper occasionally. It's a good thing to have in your bag. It's nice.
I feel Rhodey really likes them.
He really likes them. He's taken 14. I think he's 42% on the year from the mid-range. This is Mark Torvik off the top of my head. And that's fine. But for instance, Reese, I think, is 40% on, I think he's like 8 for 20.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's 40. Yeah, that's 40 on mid-range jumpers. But the reason I'm more okay with it with Reese is because typically, like, Reese is taking a lot of shots. So his 20 mid-range shots, I can pull it up. Well, again, I should have had more stats prepared, but it's almost finals week and I'm stressing out. But the thing with Rhodey is he settles for too many bad shots. The same goes for Harris. When they create offense, they can't get to the rim because they're just not either – Harris isn't big enough to get to the rim and have success. Rhodey isn't quick enough. It doesn't have a good enough handle. I'm not trying to really dunk on these guys. I think they can get better as the season progresses. Just right now, that's what worries me about this team, is that those two guys can't create good shots for themselves, and they're not really hitting from the outside at volume. Yep. So Beekman is just going to have to do what Reese is going to have to do. And if he's going to hit some jumpers, then that's fine. That's just the flow of the offense. The question is, like, where does the rest of the scoring come from? Blake Buchanan has taken way too many mid-range jump shots. The whole team has settled for too many bad shots.
Yeah.
And it's not really like I'm going to go up to them on the street and be like, take better shots, guys. Like, no, you have to run better offense and you have to just create better shots.
Right. So that's when you say run better offense, are you pointing towards execute blocker mover better, or do you mean switch up the offense to a more successful,
successful? They've been switching up the scheme, and mm-hmm. and frankly they've been doing some sort of personnel specific scheming a little bit more this year than in the past. For instance, mm-hmm. when Bond goes in the game, they typically go immediately to that triangle to get him in mm-hmm. the mid post, where he's shooting 55%, 10 for 18 on mid-range jumpers. That is valuable. If you're plus 52% from the mid-range, that means that efficiency wise, like points per shot wise, if you don't include offensive rebounds in that, points per shot wise, you are as good as you're better than a 35% 3-point shooter, right? Gotcha. So if you just extrapolate the math there, and trust me. So getting back to the scheming, it's tough. With how much the offense is reliant on Reese right now, a lot of the offense comes down to whatever offense you're in, Reese go make a play. And I think that what they, and I'm not blaming Tony for this, and I'm not frankly, even blaming the players. It's just sort of the situation that they're in right now. It's early in the season. There's going to be mistakes, or there's just going to be like, you don't know what you're doing yet, which I think is where they are. I think, frankly, I think you need to get outside the schemes. You need to get outside some of the basic stuff that you run. Bond in inside triangle, I like that. If they put the right guys in that sort of lineup and could figure things out, I think that can be a valuable change up. But I don't know if it's necessarily like, oh shoot, Reese is tired, let's put Bond in to go hit shots from the mid-range.
Right.
I think some of it just comes down to individual improvement. I think Rhodey is probably, as you've alluded to, the prime example of that.
He's got to be, right? Like, it's just that that has to be the answer.
Yeah. I mean, you really hope that, again, come February and March, he's adjusted to this level of college basketball and that he hits more catch and shoot threes, which he's been fine on. He's like, I think
he's
like
right at his average he hit last year. You know, with
those, yeah. I mean, I think he's taken more catch and shoot threes. Gotcha. Actually, this might be wrong. Anyway, on catch and shoot threes, he's been efficient. It's been asking him to do more than that beyond sort of like in the flow of the offense, which is what he did really well at St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, okay, is this going to be a 2 years down the line type of thing when he finally gets comfortable? Or is it like, is this a 2 months from now sort of thing? If it's 2 months, they're going to be fine. They're going to be able to find offense beyond that. Additionally, I love Isaac McNeely. I think he's probably the second best offensive threat that this team has. Stop scheming up mid-range jumpers for him off of pin-down screens. Make them threes. There is no point for him to be taking 12-foot jumpers. Because for him, that shot is as likely to go in as a three, and it's much less valuable. So stop it with that.
It's roughly 50% less valuable.
Yeah, exactly.
50% more valuable with threes.
Yeah. So on mid ranges, he's shooting 26.7% this season, on threes, 55%. So like four times as valuable. So I think they need to. It's tough. Like, I don't have the answers. Tony Bennett is a much better basketball mind than I could ever dream of being. But I think they need to boil it down to, what is your personnel? Like, what strengths does your personnel have? And how can you exploit those? Because you don't have a Jaden Gardner to throw it into the post. Even if he's going to shoot 6 for 14, you don't have those 14 points that he's going to bring you.
Yeah.
You know? And so you got to find the areas, the slivers of sort of strength that you have on offense, and really hone in on that and exploit them.
Well, one thing we're never going to see, unfortunately, is something I would really love to see. My dad and I were lamenting about this over both these games. Shout out, Dad. I'm sure he's listening. What if when Leon is in, they send him at the boards on offense?
Constantly.
I know he's capable. He has done it. But I mean, like, you know, we know they don't really have the green light to do that. And maybe give Leon the green light.
Like, so his offensive rebounding rate currently is 17.4%, which is highest on the team for guys who played more than 20% of the minutes. That doesn't actually qualify on KenPom for like in the country, but that's like a legit offensive rebounding rate.
Right. And also for UVA, who does not send guys at the boards, you know, there's only so much you could hope for, but it would be nice to utilize that skill. But I think,
They got to keep, go ahead.
No, like we said, I think Rhodey's going to be the key. There's no reason to be pessimistic about that at this point, right? Like he's new. We're still working it through. Can we talk about A&M specifically a little bit? Because I think, you know, this is going to present a serious measuring stick, much like the Wisconsin game. Place at home, you know, I don't care how, not that this UVA team is mid, as you kids say, I think they're pretty good, but even if they were not pretty good and we're thinking, oh, this is middle of the road or something like that, we don't fear anybody at the JPJ, you know, and any Tony Bennett team can beat any team coming into Charlottesville. So I like that they're ranked. I like that they're playing really well. And I think the Hoos can beat them.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong there. Frankly, I think that the UVA sports fan base needs it pretty desperately. I have not watched Texas A&M extensively, just from looking at their stats. As I said earlier, they're the top offensive rebounding team in the country at the moment. Then again, I also said that those don't matter. So those clearly don't matter. I think, yeah, this is another test for Blake. I think that he's kind of getting thrown to the fire a little bit, thrown to the wolves, whatever you say, thrown into the
Thrown
fire,
into the fire.
thrown into the fire, thrown to the wolves. And I that's kind of cool. Like, why not? You know, I just kind of vibe with the kid and see if he can figure it out. I don't know. I didn't, I mean, he's much, yeah, I don't know. This game makes me nervous because I feel like, I mean, they don't shoot the ball well. They're 28.8% on the year. But at the same time, like, I would rather have a team that was like, yeah, we're going to just load you up with like perimeter guards who are going to try to beat you rather than like the big dudes who are going to crash the boards. But yeah, I think this team is entirely beatable. I think that Reese Beekman, yeah, I don't
Couldn't
know.
re-sign Wade Taylor, who's the best scorer. I mean, you would hope that they're good. You hope in that strength on strength that helps Virginia. But their second best scorer is a name very familiar to UVA fans. It's Henry Coleman, who he beats up on dudes in the paint. That's sort of his MO. So that's gonna be. I mean, we got Ryan Dunn. Like it's not like Virginia is gonna get dominated in the paint by teams. It's just that duo. Have if they had. I'm not even looking at the roster. Like Henry's not the 7-footer who's going to come in and be too tall and give people problems, but he's still going to be athletic and experienced enough that if it's not done on him, and if it's instead a Groves or a Buchanan, that's going to be a mismatch in the favor of the Aggies.
I'm curious if this is when we do see Minor, just as like, yeah, we need bulk and we need it in abundance. Because, I mean, in this game, like Texas A&M is entirely beatable. And I think that if you can just, I don't know Coleman's injury status, but if you can just contain the domination in the paint, I think you can absolutely win this game. I don't think Miner's playing 25, but can he give you 15 good minutes? And then you play around otherwise. I don't know. I Wisconsin was just not inspiring because you sort of watch that game and you're like, oh wow, Wisconsin is really good at sort of moving the ball around the perimeter and they can sort of take advantage and they have good movement. And then you look at sort of their stats and you're like, they're really not that inspiring of a team. So to see UVA let up 1.19 points per possession, that was kind of ugly, you know? Also, I'm realizing that well, we don't need to go back down this rabbit hole, but the 1.18 points per possession, that was overall. So that included the 0.6 points per possession on second chance opportunities. So if you took that out, they would actually be even better on initial 30 second. And then again, anyway, we're just gonna forget that for now. Anyway, I think that sort of the narrative of this team improving, you can see tangibly those areas of improvement or the areas for improvement. And it is just kind of a question mark of how many of the guys are tangibly better at playing basketball in February in this system than they are now. And I think that it's very realistically possible that that's like four dudes. Like it could be Rhodey, it could be Buchanan, could be Minor, could be Jake Groves if he gets more comfortable defensively, or at least just a little bit less baby giraffe, as we like to say. Trying to think who else, like maybe Harris, maybe he's a little bit more efficient. Dunn has been elite around the basket and just elite defensively. So I think that there's a lot to like for this team. I'm not like ringing any panic, like any bells of, you know, I don't think that this is, even if they get blown out in this game, I'm honestly not that worried about it, just because I think that they have the elite traits and elite players that could allow them to be a lot better later in the year. Last year, I just didn't think that they had elite guys. Like at a certain point, talent wins out and they didn't have the athleticism. I think that this team does. That's with a hampered Reese Beekman and a Ryan Dunn who only got like 9 minutes a game. I think this team does, and it's just a matter of can you fill in the gaps otherwise? And how soon that happens, I don't know, but I think it will eventually.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. We won't be back until after the Syracuse game as well, which is on a Saturday. So, you know, starting an early pre-exam break ECC game. Syracuse has two big losses to two, you know, top 10 programs in Tennessee and Gonzaga, and then they blew out Chaminade. Before that, they have, you know, some wins over, well, I guess Colgate by four is sort of neither here nor there, but they do play LSU before Virginia. So a game to watch for to try to get an idea. Right now, the stats very, very much favor the Hoos over Syracuse because Syracuse does not play defense. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that too. But, you know, Syracuse at home, big opportunity to start on a high note for ACC play, regardless of what happens against A&M. But I like the Hoos to win both games this week. So we
including A&M? See.
Yeah, those games. Okay. Those two
yeah,
games.
Yeah, sorry. NC Central feels like it's this week.
Next week, yeah. Before, but yeah, I got you. That's the last one before exam break. I keep forgetting we play Memphis, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. Memphis looks pretty darn good, so that'll be an interesting matchup. But stay tuned to streakingalon.com for analysis of this A&M game and then the Syracuse game on Saturday. Plenty of coverage there, of course. Until next week, for everybody at the blog, I'm Pierce. Go Hoos.